Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Thursday, November 6th. Coming up today, we'll hear from a Sheppey couple who have threatened to take the range to court. A warning from the National Crime Agency about smuggling gangs targeting lorry drivers, and there have been tributes following the death of a bison that was part of a wild herd near Canterbury. But we'll start today's podcast with a catch-up of all the crime news from across the county. Three teenagers charged with murder following the death of a man on Sheppey are due to enter pleas in court later. A 16-year-old girl and two boys aged 14 and 15 from London are accused of causing the death of Alexander Cashford. Police have been called to reports of a disturbance in Laysdown in August. The 49-year-old had suffered a number of injuries. A drug driver who knocked down and killed a 10-year-old girl in Dartford has had his sentence reduced. Lily Lockwood died after being struck by a car just metres from her home in Stone in 2021. 55-year-old Gavin Prodger from Biola Rise in Rochester was jailed for 12 years in 2023. That's been reduced to 8 years and 6 months following an appeal to the Royal Courts of Justice. Two drug dealers found asleep in a bed surrounded by cash and cocaine in Waltham have been sentenced. Police raided the flat in Monkwood Avenue in June and seized £20,000 in substances, including ketamine. A 27-year-old was jailed for 2 years and 10 months, while a 28-year-old got a suspended term and unpaid work. A police dog sniffed out suspected Class A drugs after a car being driven dangerously was stopped in Medway. Officers pulled over the red Toyota Aygo in Maritime Close in Strood on Tuesday. PD Tilly helped them recover 14 bags under the driver's seat and cannabis in the passenger seat. A 41-year-old man from Gillingham's been arrested. An asylum seeker who returned to the UK by small boat after being removed under the government's one-in-one-out policy with France has been deported again. The Iranian national came back across the channel on the 18th of October after being forced to leave a month earlier. The Home Secretary says she'll do whatever it takes to secure our borders. Now, it comes as there's a warning. People smuggling gangs are trying to recruit lorry drivers to transport asylum seekers in and out of the UK. It's after a number of drivers have been arrested in Kent while trying to board trains or ferries with people in their vehicles illegally. The National Crime Agency says HGV drivers can be offered thousands of pounds to get migrants across the border. Craig Turner is from the NCA.
So the National Crime Agency really do want to send out a clear warning that organised criminal gangs are actively recruiting HGV drivers to smuggle migrants both in and out of the UK. This follows a real spike in arrests in the Kent area that has seen a number of drivers detained as they attempt to board trains and ferries whilst carrying people illegally in their vehicles. The people smugglers are known to target these drivers, offering them thousands of pounds to transport people across borders in otherwise legitimate loads. In some cases, the drivers are known to actually assist some of the migrants, obviously getting on board, obviously their vehicles. Others have turned a blind eye in relation to leaving their vehicles and obviously allowing that activity to take place. Obviously, this is quite a way of individuals to make extra money. Some of them see that as being pretty much low risk. In fact, it's anything but. Yeah, obviously, drivers stand to obviously get a lengthy custodial sentence as a result of this. It places people at risk. Obviously, a lot of the containers are contained and sealed, putting vulnerable people at risk. And obviously, taking people out of the country and in the country obviously really does magnify the risks to actual individuals. Those drivers that do get caught, obviously face life-changing prison sentences. And in essence, it's just not worth the actual risk. So the NCA, National Crime Agency, are sending out a clear preventative message in order to stop this type of activity.
Kent Online News.
A huge fire has broken out at a plastic manufacturing plant next to a Tesco store in Ramsgate. Pictures at Kent Online show flames coming from the Flambeau building in Manston Road yesterday evening. Six fire engines were sent to tackle the blaze and no one was hurt. Elsewhere, four fire engines have been sent to Sevenoaks after an area of undergrowth caught alight. The blaze broke out on Hubbard's Hill late last night. It took crews more than 4 hours to put out the flames. No one was hurt and the cause is not yet known. Now, teachers at a Kent school say they've already noticed a difference just 2 months after banning mobile phones. Trinity School in Seven Oaks is the latest in the county to insist pupils put devices in a lockable pouch during the day. The decision was made following a consultation with all staff, students and parents. Martin Richardson is the assistant head teacher.
Although smartphones in this school were not prevalent, we weren't seeing them all the time. Students were certainly not scrolling on them mindlessly at break and lunch because they weren't allowed to be out. We were becoming aware that maybe they were using them when teachers weren't seeing them. And through student feedback now, we're aware that that definitely did happen. So we wanted to give them 6 hours during the day where a phone just was not a distraction. They're in a safe place. They're here in school. If we need to contact home, we can do. Having a mobile phone, it just wasn't necessary. It wasn't a necessary part of the day. Phones are so disruptive to your day. A notification pinging in your pocket continuously can stop your learning process. It can be disruptive to the classroom. And we just felt like if we locked them away and said, we're going to put them in these pouches, it will give those students the opportunity to just forget about them for 6 hours.
Before this kind of action was passed, did you kind of consult with parents, other staff members, met you a senior board or something like that?
Yeah. There was a big process where we spoke to parents, we spoke to teachers, we thought about it long and hard. I mean, one of the most important things to do if you're going to implement something like this that's going to impact a whole community is to make sure you've got people on board. And we did that. Our head teacher, Dr. Pawson, put out a survey, both to teachers and to parents, to talk about this initiative. We also spoke directly to students as well and asked them, is there a problem with mobile phones in this school? Do you think this would be a welcome addition to your school day? So we did get lots of student voice, parent voice and staff voice to make sure we were making a decision that benefited everyone. Yeah, definitely.
How did the students initially react to this new ban?
The students have been really positive about it. They definitely were apprehensive about it at first, but I think now if you look at our social areas at break and lunch, there's so much interaction with our students. They're really engaging with each other. They're talking, they're running around, they're smiling, they're laughing. They were doing that before, but now there's just much more of it. It's so noticeable. We don't get little congregations of where maybe we might have found a few students huddling in a corner with a phone out and we'd had to kind of deal with that. We don't have that anymore. It's not a problem. And that's great. So in terms of behaviour management, we've seen a massive decline in kind of mobile phone usage in schools because they just don't have them. Now, some people have said, well, what if they break open the pouch and they get their phone out? What's stopping them? Well, if we think about that, all of them would have to do it. All of their friends would have to do it. And if it's just a minority, who are they going to contact? Because all their friends are in school, their phones are in pouches. The only people they could contact are home. And at home, they're going to say, why isn't your phone in a pouch? How are you contacting me? So it doesn't really make sense for them to break them open. So, you know, so far, so good. It's had a really positive impact.
Lily and Dante both go to the school. They've told us how they found the ban.
I think at first it was a lot of adjustment because everyone was absolutely furious. But once, first week, it was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? But then it changed, and then now it's kind of quite unnoticeable. You just walk in, put your phone in your pouch, and at the end of the day, you get it.
And has the ban kind of positively influenced your friendships in any way, or the way that you interact socially?
A little bit. I wouldn't say a lot, but then at break and lunch, like you said, I do spend a lot more time actually talking with my friends rather than on our phones.
I'd say I've got more awareness of what my friends are actually doing. I'm looking at their face, actually, I can recognise facial features a lot more, a little bit better than how I used to.
So would you say you feel more connected to people now?
Yeah, most definitely, 100%. I'm for it. I think it's just going to keep improving. Each year it's about and present.
Kent Online News.
Plans to close a special needs school in Thanet have officially been approved. Bradstow School in Broadstairs is run by Wandsworth Council, but there are some Kent pupils. Bosses say closing the site is their only option because of ongoing financial challenges. If you live in and around Canterbury, you're being asked about plans to increase charges in the busiest car parks. The council's considering a 10p per hour hike as part of plans to encourage green transport transport and cut pollution. Band 1 car parks are in the most central locations in the district. They could rise to £3.80 an hour from next April if the plans are approved. Now, this next story is one of the most read on the website today. A Sheppey couple who threatened to take the range to court over a furniture order have been told they'll get a £1,200 refund. Stanley and Betty Chadwick from Warden Bay bought four electric recliner armchairs from the store in Sittingbourne in September, but a number of parts were missing when the order arrived. Stanley has explained the situation.
Well, there's supposed to be four sets of recliner chairs. We've got three recliner chairs and one base of a recliner chair because the other partner have never ever turned up, leaving us now with seven boxes which we can't use. They've told us to box them all up, which took us 5 days going around looking to get boxes, because when you undo something, you don't put the boxes away, not in furniture, you get rid of them, which we did. And we've done all of that, and we're still stuck with them. Now, I emailed them on last Friday. I turned around and said to them, if we don't hear from you by the 4th of next month, which will be tomorrow, I'll be going to Maidstone to small claims court to see if they can do anything for me.
How's the whole situation make you feel?
Sick as a pig. Putting it mildly, my wife is literally going mental over it. It's driving her around the bend, and it is, really. I mean, you just think about it. She thinks about it and she starts going into it. She can't take no more.
As you heard there, after several correspondence with the company, they demanded the furniture be taken away and they get their money back. When Kent Online contacted the retailer last week, they agreed to collect the furniture and offered a full refund along with a £50 voucher. A spokeswoman said, "We acknowledge that the initial collection did not go ahead as planned. Our team reached out to the customer on October 21st to offer the earliest available collection date of October 24th. As the customer has not responded to this outreach, we've been unable to rearrange the collection. We are keen to resolve this matter and encourage the customer to get in touch so we can agree a convenient date and bring this to a positive resolution." People living on a road in Herne Bay have criticised the installation of four traffic islands, saying they'll add to congestion in the area. They've been installed on Greenhill Road, close to where new homes are being built as part of traffic calming efforts. Some residents have described them as monstrosities. The County Council say they're part of an agreed scheme linked to the Oxenden Park development. They add they'll be subject to a post-completion safety audit.
Kent Online News.
Parents in Kent are being told now is the time to brush up on basic first aid. St John's Ambulance says knowing what to do with things like burns and smoke inhalation could be vital, especially around festive celebrations. Grace Lawson is a training team manager based in Maidstone. She's been chatting to Lucy.
We want to share first aid advice because although those kind of firework filled activities are great fun for adults and children, they're also really prone to accidents and injuries. So we're trying to get the information of how you can pick up some really simple first aid tips to help you prepare for this time of year.
So talk us through some of that first aid advice then, and what people should do if someone, for example, suffers a burn at a firework event.
So for burns, if someone has a burn or a scald, so a scald is what we'd associate with hot water. First of all, we need to move the person away from the heat. That's a really important thing to do. We need to place the burn under cool or lukewarm running water for at least 20 minutes. If the burn is to a child, if it's bigger than the palm of their hand, or if it's on the casualty's face, their hands or their feet, or it's just a generally quite deep burn, we need to call 999 for the casualty as well. If they're wearing clothing or they've got jewellery around the area of the burn, if we can try and remove it, that would be great. But if it's stuck to the burn, then we should perhaps leave it there and wait for the emergency services to arrive. In the meantime, if we can cover the burn loosely and lengthways with kitchen film, that would help prevent infection and keep it clean. We don't recommend bursting blisters. And in the meantime, we'll just monitor them and treat them for shock if necessary. And you can find information on how to treat shock on our website or posters as well, if you need to. We'd like them to seek medical advice always. If they don't go to hospital, they might not need to, but seeking medical advice is really important. Just to make sure that you know, they're going to be okay and they're monitored.
And have you been out, you know, as your role in St John Ambulance, have you been out to any events where there have been any incidents like this?
So personally, I haven't. I don't go out on kind of any treatment centres with St John Ambulance, because my role is to teach other people first aid, and they're a little bit separated. However, I have a four-year-old son, so he is always getting into accidents and trying to pour water over himself that's a bit too hot for him and bits like that. So I've had to treat him, unfortunately, previously. But yeah, I don't tend to go out onto events anymore.
As a parent, though, yourself, I mean, would you kind of urge all parents to know this kind of thing in case something happens?
Absolutely. I find it a really important skill. And I would be quite, I think, a lot more anxious with my son if I didn't have these background skills, because children do all sorts of things impulsively. They want to go out and have fun, but they don't necessarily have any concern for rules or safety or anything like that. So I think by parents understanding these skills and having even a few little tips and bits of first aid under their belt, it can really help them to feel more comfortable and confident taking their children to events, because they know that if anything were to go wrong, touch wood, it wouldn't, but they would know how to resolve that.
Yeah, I suppose that confidence as well could help you stay calm in that situation, because I imagine it's important not to panic if something does happen.
Yeah, and I would always find it personally, if it's one of my family, I'd find it more difficult to treat them than if it was someone else, if it were someone that I don't know. So if we've had delegates come on first aid courses and become unwell, I find that relatively simple to treat. But when there's emotions involved and it's your own family, it can be really panicking, like make you really panic. So having those skills does provide a little bit of calm, because you can understand, okay, do I need to send them to hospital? Is this something that's very severe? Is it something I can treat at home? And if I can treat it at home, what can I do? Especially with things like burns, the sooner it's treated, the sooner you start to cool the burn, the less likely they are to kind of suffer later down the line. So it's really important to get it treated as quickly as possible.
Bosses in a village near Maidstone say they've had to remove play equipment from a park as they couldn't guarantee it was still safe. Parents in Collier Street say they're frustrated the facility's been dismantled and claim they hadn't been consulted or given any notice. The parish council say they plan to deliver a new improved playground next year. A dog has been found almost 300 days after going missing during a walk at Darenth Country Park. Drones and thermal imaging cameras were used to try and find Bella after she disappeared in January. She was eventually tracked down last week after being recognised from a dog lost poster. Now, dog walkers and people living near the Swanscombe Peninsula are being reassured that work taking place on the site has been approved by nature bosses. There were concerns when excavating machinery and tipper lorries turned up in the area that was once under threat from plans for a theme park. Natural England say it's for track widening and resurfacing work, along with cutting back overgrown shrubs. And there are tributes being paid following the death of a female bison who was part of a wild herd near Canterbury. She led the group that was released into Blean Woods in 2022, but has now passed away at the age of 21. Donovan Wright is a bison and rewilding ranger at Wildwood Trust.
We've been with her from the start. She has been such an integral part of this project from the very first day. She was the first bison that arrived on site. She was the first bison to step out of the bison corral and into the woods. The first free-roaming bison in the UK for thousands of years. With the passing, we've also had new life, and it's these three calves, newborn calves, and oh my goodness, they are absolutely adorable. And it's a huge milestone for us here in the UK. It's just such a ray of hope, you know, in rewilding today, and to have not only these three calves, but they are genetically supercharged. You know, they are, born free, you know, out in the wild bison calves, and they're going to go on to become hopefully future matriarchs and dominant bulls in the herds that they move on to eventually. And so we're very, very grateful to welcome them and into the family. Oh, it's just lovely to have them and to see they bring youth and energy into the herd.
A new leader will also now emerge. Bison Ranger Heidi Agirigoa-Koa has been telling us what will happen over the coming weeks and months.
What we expect to see now is that a few of the dynamics will change in the herd, where the matriarch is now gone, a new matriarch will take her place, so one of our older females will assume this role quite naturally. in the 3 years that the matriarch and her herd have been here, we've seen enormous change in our woodlands. You know, we've got these long pathways built through the woodlands that are used by all sorts of animals. They're making sure we have these nice sunny rides and glades that the butterflies, the dragonflies, all the insects love. Have dust bathing sites all around the woodland, and these are fantastic for reptiles and solitary bees. And yeah, you can really see there's almost not one area of it not touched in some way. You can see the biting of the bark, you see their teeth marks. So yeah, really lovely to see that effect all across the woodland. Of course, the team is really saddened by the passing of the matriarch, but all I can say is I'm so proud of how far she came. Coming from a zoo setting to here, she really has left this legacy where she led the other bison, showed them instinctually what to eat, what leaves to eat, what to browse, to get all the nutrients they needed. And that knowledge now should be passed down through the generations, from the new matriarch to the new calves and so on. So I really think she's always going to be here with us. We're all really excited to see where future bison projects progress in the next 5-10 years. Hopefully they'll be popping up all around the UK. But we'll always remember that our matriarch was the very first to step foot out into the wild and to enjoy and manage these woodlands.
That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads, no pop-ups, and exclusive stories. You can choose a subscription plan that works best for you. For more details, head to kentonline.co.uk/subscribe.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.